Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 30th, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Macon County, Animal Control Changing Guard, Sheriff Exiting Oversight Role Amid City-County Contract Talks, by Tony Reed, Decatur. It's been a long 20-year leash, but Macon County Sheriff Jim Root says it's time to cut loose Macon County Animal Control. And after August 1st, the wardens who deal with stray dogs and cats and animal bites and barking nuisance complaints will no longer be under the control of the sheriff's office. Root said his office had agreed 2 decades ago to temporarily take over running what had always been a separate Macon County department, and now it stands as a job more than done. At the time we took it over, it was to provide some professional guidance on the oversight that it was decided animal control needed, Root told the Herald and Review. It was supposed to be a temporary responsibility for the sheriff's office, but it never transitioned back to the control of the county. The sheriff didn't comment on contractual matters, but the big dog on the block in terms of animal control is the city of Decatur. It generates more than 90% of the call volume for Macon County Animal Control, and the city's 2026 budget shows city taxpayers listed to kick in more than $790,000 to animal control coffers to pay for services. And it just so happens that the contract, or intergovernmental agreement between the city and animal control, is up for renegotiation. It runs out this week, and Macon County Administrator Tamara Wilcox said the city had given notice to renegotiate because they wanted to make some changes. She was not willing to discuss contract specifics and said the timing of contract expiration and the sheriff relinquishing oversight of animal control was coincidental. Asked if money was the big issue in negotiations with the city, Wilcox replied with a laugh, "It always involves money." In a submitted statement, Decatur City Manager Melissa Hahn said, "It is my understanding that the county will continue to provide animal control services to Macon County, and we are in the process of negotiating an agreement for services provided above and beyond what is required by state statute." She did not address any further questions surrounding the issue. Wilcox said the county board had been pleased with the job the sheriff's department had been doing with the administration of animal control, and under ideal circumstances, would have liked to see the status quo maintained. "They did such a good job, and we'd prefer the sheriff keep running it," she added. "But we understand that he wants to change his focus and use his resources elsewhere." Wilcox said no layoffs were planned as a part of the change of control of the department. The sheriff's office had provided a sworn officer as administrator who oversees a staff of 6 animal control wardens who are not sworn officers with arrest powers. It costs about $1.5 million a year to run the operation, and that total nudges close to $2 million with the rental costs of the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center building included. Wilcox said the City of Decatur administration and the county were busy hammering out a fresh agreement that would keep everything running smoothly. Asked if she was confident of getting a deal, she said, "What we're probably going to end up doing is an extension on the current agreement. And so we will then have a year to work on a new intergovernmental agreement. And you know, with the sheriff relinquishing control, I think a new administrator we're hiring will have some new ideas, and an extension will give us a year to work all that stuff out. In the meantime, everything for the general public should remain the same, and they probably won't even notice the difference." Sergeant Ron Atkins is the current animal control administrator. He said his department provides various services to different communities within Macon County, with some, like Decatur, using more, and others much less. Mount Zion does a lot of their own animal control, for example, And each municipality gets billed from us for the services they use. And that's basically a per-call fee they get charged, Atkins explained. But we operate the only public animal shelter in Macon County. Atkins will return to other duties in the Sheriff's Department on August 1st and says he will miss working with the staff. But after 4 years in the job, he's ready for a change. It's been a good experience, and I enjoyed my time, he added. But I'm ready to go back. News in Brief by Scott Perry. Petitions open for city council mayor roles. Decatur. Nominating petitions are available for those interested in running for mayor or one of three seats on the Decatur City Council in the April 6th election. Petitions can be obtained from the city clerk's office on the second floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza, or online at decaturil.gov/161/city-clerk. The open council positions are held by Dennis Cooper, Lisa Gregory, and Pat McDaniel. The mayor position is held by Julie Moore Wolf. Candidates must be United States citizens, registered voters, age 18 or older, and must reside within the city limits for 1 year preceding the election. Petitions containing the signatures of at least 45 registered city voters will be filed with the city clerk during normal business hours, beginning at 8 a.m. Monday, October 19th, and ending at 5 p.m. Monday, October 26th. If a primary is required, it will be held on Tuesday, February 23rd. National Night Out set for August 4th by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations will sponsor the 43rd Annual National Night Out on Tuesday, August 4th. It will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. at Dansby Park, formerly Oak Grove Park, 2230 West Center Street. The Decatur Public Transit trolleys will provide shuttle service to and from this free family event that will include food, lawn and yard games, foam party, prizes, face painting, bounce house, a touch-a-truck display, mobile zoo, police, fire. National Night Out is an annual event with the goal of promoting strong relationships between police and community and creating neighborhood camaraderie. A special award will be given to recognize a deserving neighborhood ambassador. This year's theme is Stronger, Safer Together. The trolleys will provide continuous shuttle service in loops from the Decatur Civic Center and the following parks beginning at 4:45 p.m. The North Trolley route will start at the Civic Center with stops at MacArthur High School's lower lot and Torrance, Hess, Garfield, and Dansby Parks before returning to the Civic Center. The South Trolley route will depart from Mueller Park and make stops at Johns Hill, Cloquet, Jasper, and Dansby Parks before returning to Mueller, also in a continuous loop. Additional parking will be available at MacArthur High School, where attendees can board the North Route trolley. Trolleys will continue running throughout the event, with the final departure from Dansby Park at 8 p.m. to return attendees to their designated trolley stops. Middle East, military could pull cell phones from soldiers, by Phil Stewart, Reuters. The top U.S. commander for the Middle East has warned troops that cell phone videos shared online can help Iran target American bases, and sources told Reuters some deployed personnel could soon be ordered to surrender their phones. Any crackdown on mobile communications would add a new dimension to the conflict for the thousands of U.S. troops in the region, many of whom still rely on phones to periodically message loved ones and assure them they are well. Admiral Brad Cooper, in a previously unreported letter, said Iran benefits from being able to see the success or failure of its strikes in near real time by searching news reports or online posts by journalists referencing reactions, photos, and footage from the cell phones of our troops. The direct, unavoidable cost of this open source intelligence could be measured in the lives of American service members and civilian residents in targeted Gulf countries. Cooper, head of U.S. Central Command, wrote in his Tuesday letter, a copy of which was obtained by Reuters. He called on troops to redouble our focus on operational security without prescribing specific steps in the memo. The warning underscored the mounting tensions between real-time news reporting on the war, often aided by satellite imagery, and first-person accounts, and the desire by the U.S. military to restrict information that could aid Iran. In Jordan, which has been a frequent target of Iranian strikes, some troops were told their phones will be confiscated in the coming days, two sources familiar with the matter told Reuters. A third source said such a move was being considered in the region due to operational concerns, but did not present the confiscation as a certainty. As for comment, U.S. Central Command spokesperson Captain Timothy Hawkins said, "The message is a general reminder to our service members on the importance of maintaining operational security. This is one of many opportunities Admiral Cooper has used to convey operational priorities." Running for shelter. In a video posted online this month, a U.S. service member recorded a video as soldiers ran for shelter during a deadly Iranian attack on the Muwafaq Salty Air Base in Jordan on July 17th. Cooper appeared to reference the footage in his letter, saying it had been recorded on Meta smart glasses with a built-in camera. Video captured from a service member's Meta glasses was posted on Instagram, showing where and how the individual had evacuated to a bunker during an Iranian missile and drone attack, Cooper wrote. Iran would normally have a difficult time determining the success or failure of its strikes, were it not for such accounts, Cooper said, thanks to the U.S. military's electronic jamming or other tactics used in war zones. Iran knows the weapons were fired. However, their forces do not know if they missed by 50 meters, hit an empty tarmac, or successfully struck a crowded facility, he wrote. Detailed lists, descriptions, and analyses of what was hit, openly published by news outlets, are essentially performing Iran's battle damage assessment, BDA, for them, free of charge. At least 18 U.S. troops died so far in the conflict with Iran that started on February 28th, and more than 600 have been wounded in the fighting, casualties that deepened Americans' concerns about a war that just one in three Americans support. Democratic lawmakers called for more information about the war, including details about damage to U.S. infrastructure on bases, including radar towers, barracks, and aircraft hangars. They also called for the release of a U.S. military investigation into a likely U.S. strike on a girls' school in Iran, first reported by Reuters on the opening day of the war on February 28th. Cell phones. Rules surrounding cell phone use for deployed troops can vary widely across the military, officials say. Many troops have to lock them away, and cell phones can be banned on particularly sensitive missions by special operations forces, for example. But the possible seizure of phones stoked anxiety among some family members, already on edge in recent months, as they read Iranian claims of deadly strikes on bases throughout the Middle East, two of the sources said. U.S. officials cautioned for years that certain applications on mobile devices, like fitness applications, can be exploited by adversaries to aid adversary targeting because of location data. Reuters reported in May that commercially available location data harvested from smartphones or other devices has been used to target or surveil U.S. forces. At the same time, the Pentagon sought to carefully control the release of information due to what it says are operational security concerns, often declining to comment on Iran's attack claims or detail individual incidents that led to injuries of U.S. troops. Cooper said details on strikes can help Iran mount follow-up attacks. Detailed public disclosures can become an immediate green light for Iranian forces to launch a secondary, much more devastating wave of attacks, he said. Illinois public schools. Pritzker okays cell phone ban. Many school districts in state already have set similar policies. By Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois. Students in all Illinois public schools will soon have to abide by rules barring them from using cell phones or other personal electronic communication devices during school hours, unless they have been given specific permission to use them. Although many districts already have similar policies in place, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation Tuesday that will require all districts to have bell-to-bell device bans in place before the start of the 2027-2028 school year. The goal, Pritzker said, is to eliminate the distractions that cell phones and other devices can create so students and teachers can focus their attention on learning. We want to make sure that every hour of school time can have the greatest possible positive impact, Pritzker said at a bill signing ceremony at Elgin High School. We're allowing every child to fully learn, participate, ask questions, and build the skills and interpersonal relationships that they need to thrive. Senate Bill 2427 requires districts to adopt policies that broadly restrict the use of wireless communication devices during school hours. Those include cell phones, laptops, tablets, gaming devices, and wearable devices such as smartwatches. But they do not include devices that schools or teachers issue to students for educational purposes. The law requires districts to make exceptions for devices that are needed for medical reasons, for special education purposes, or for language translation if a student is an English language learner. Districts may also make exceptions on a case-by-case basis for students who are also caregivers for family members at home. It also permits students to exclude a high school student's lunch and passing periods from the definition of school time. The law also prohibits schools from using fines, fees, suspensions, or expulsions to enforce the policies, unless a student uses a regulated device to engage in some other type of gross disobedience or misconduct that would warrant such discipline. The reason we made the difference in high school is because you have a lot of students who do dual high school and college credit, Senator Christina Castro, Democrat Elgin, the lead Senate sponsor of the bill, said during the ceremony. Sometimes they go part of the day and then go to work. And also, you're giving them a little more responsibility. The law requires school districts to review their policies at least once every 3 years and to consult with teachers' unions, administrators, parents, and community members in making revision. Truck crashes into train. No severe injuries as 40 Amtrak passengers are transferred to bus. By Danette Beckett, Arcola. No severe injuries were reported after an Amtrak passenger train struck a semi-truck trailer Tuesday in Arcola. According to the Illinois State Police, the crash happened around noon Tuesday at the railroad crossing at Illinois 133 and US 45. Video obtained from a bystander showed the trailer of the truck was stopped on the tracks when the southbound train struck it. All passengers were taken to a community center, where two passengers requested to be taken to a local hospital. The investigation is ongoing. No additional information was available about what caused the truck to remain on the tracks while the train was traveling in the area. Arcola City Administrator Bill Wagoner was contacted shortly after the crash to assist with the passengers. Most people were in good spirits, he said. They were very thankful to have a place to go and air conditioning. Buses were able to transport approximately 40 passengers to their designated train stations, including Effingham, Centralia, and Carbondale. They were loaded on a small charter bus, Wagner said. They were out of there at about 3:30 p.m. The Douglas County Emergency Management provided supplies, such as water, to help the passengers during their stay. People made the best of it, Wagner said. More than anything, they were thankful to have internet and power. By mid-afternoon, the trains were moving through, although cleanup continued on the rail crossing, Wagoner said. The truck wiped out the arms and the flashing lights, and the signals are gone, he said. It'll be a while cleaning that up. New state laws. Law marks Emmett Till legacy. Pritzker also signs bills ruling boaters insurance lengthy service windows by Brendan Moore and Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. July 25th is now officially Emmett Till Day in Illinois. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation codifying the designation ahead of what would have been Till's 85th birthday. It was one of 78 bills the governor signed last week. Till, a 14-year-old from Chicago, was kidnapped, beaten, and brutally lynched by two white men while he was visiting family in Mississippi in 1955. It came after he allegedly whistled at a white female store clerk. The men accused of murdering Till were acquitted by an all-white, all-male jury, though they later confessed to a journalist the details of their crime. Till's mother, Mamie Till Mobley, held a public, open casket funeral for her son, exposing his severely mutilated body in an event that served as a catalyst for the American Civil Rights Movement. In Illinois, we understand that we cannot build a more just future if we are unwilling to confront the injustices of our past, Pritzker said. This legislation ensures that Mamie Till and his mother, Mamie Till Mobley, will never be forgotten. Their legacy will continue to challenge us to be better, and their example will continue to inspire us to build a state and a nation that lives up to its highest ideals. Pritzker signed the legislation, House Bill 4323, at Roberts Temple Church of God in Christ in Bronzeville, the site of Till's funeral that was designated a national landmark by President Joe Biden in 2023. Boaters insurance. Pritzker also signed Senate Bill 2972, which would require the owner of boats with at least a 50-horsepower engine or that are at least 21 feet long to obtain liability insurance. Violations carry a fine of at least $500, but no more than $1,000. First-time offenders who obtain the required coverage by their court date will have their punishment reduced to a $100 fine and court supervision. It takes effect January 1, 2027. Pet custody. The governor signed House Bill 4540, which creates a legal pathway for separated couples or roommates to go to court to fight for custody of an animal. The bill's sponsor, Representative Barbara Hernandez, Democrat Aurora, said pet custody is already a subject for divorce cases, but there was no existing legal mechanism for non-married cohabitants to determine custody of a pet that may be jointly owned. The bill will allow courts to consider who has been responsible for caring for the pet, paying for pet visits, emotional bonds between a pet and a human, the living environment, and documentation on who bought the animal. It takes effect January 1, 2027. Early high school credit. Seventh and eighth grade students soon will be able to take high school level coursework and receive high school credit. House Bill 4239, sponsored by Senator Laura Ellman, Democrat Naperville, provides that middle school students may enroll in high school courses offered by the high school they would attend, provided the course is taught by a properly licensed teacher and can be taken at the student's current school. Students learn at different paces, and our policies should reflect that, Ellman said in a statement. This law will ensure that motivated middle school students have clear, equitable access to high school coursework without unnecessary barriers, while maintaining the high standards families expect. The law takes effect January 1, 2027. Teacher evaluations. Senate Bill 2913 clarifies that student growth can only be used as a factor in teacher evaluations if the district and the teachers, or their teachers' union, agree to do so in advance. Student growth factors were a required element in teacher evaluations until 2025, when the law was changed to say districts may incorporate those factors, subject to negotiation between the district and the teachers. Under the new law, starting July 1, 2026, if the district and the teachers or their collective bargaining unit cannot agree on whether to use student growth data as a factor in evaluations, then the default policy will be not to use such data. Teacher discipline. Teachers now have greater ability to challenge written warnings about alleged misconduct. Under Senate Bill 2914, before a school board can vote to issue a written warning to a teacher for alleged misconduct, the teacher has a right to challenge the findings in the proposed warning, either in person or in writing. And if the board votes to issue the warning anyway, it allows the teacher to take the issue to binding arbitration. The new law takes effect immediately. Service windows. Illinois consumers will soon have new protections against lengthy service appointment windows. Senate Bill 3066 will require companies such as cable, plumbing, and other home service providers to provide at least 1 hour notice via phone call of their arrival at a residence if the service appointment window they provide is more than 2 hours. If a company fails to provide the required notice and the customer isn't home when they arrive, they will be prohibited from charging fees associated with the missed appointment. I don't think that people should be left holding the bag if a company failed to communicate with them, said Senator Christopher Belt, Democrat Swansea, the bill's sponsor. If a service provider fails to follow the rules and shows up without proper notice, we shouldn't be stuck paying extra fees. The bill takes effect January 1, 2027. Digest. SpaceX gets $1.6 billion in government contracts. Washington. SpaceX won $1.6 billion in orders Wednesday from the U.S. Space Force to launch 18 Falcon 9 missions through 2027, carrying Pentagon satellites for detecting and targeting airborne objects, the service said. The 18 missions were assigned to SpaceX across two task orders under the U.S. Space Force's flagship launch procurement program, in which SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, Blue Origin, and other U.S. launch firms inducted into the program jockey for lucrative mission assignments. SpaceX bagged at least $7 billion worth of Pentagon contracts this year as the Trump administration laid groundwork for its Golden Dome missile defense shield, roughly $185 billion multi-year endeavor heavily featuring Elon Musk's launch and satellite company. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review dated Thursday, July 30th, 2026. Please stay tuned.